Hello and welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. It's the 31st of January 2025. I'm Phil Brining, and this week I was joined by Joe Kirk and Katarina Santos. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
So, another podcast, another month gone by. How was that? We covered quite a lot of ground, didn't we, at GDPR Radio?
We did, yeah. I think my favourite conversation was probably at the start when we kind of tried to unpick the ICO and suspected amendments in the Dewar Bill, kind of looking at innovation and whether that's going to conflict with the ICO's primary objective of protecting individuals. And then it kind of we sat on that for quite a while, didn't we, actually, because mm-hmm. there's quite a few kind of similar stories. We spoke a little bit around kind of the ICO's drop in response time to complaints that it gets, quite a severe drop. And then we touched on kind of how the ICO was going to try and meet the government's innovation demands, I guess, as one of the key 14 regulators, I believe, that they wrote out to on Christmas Eve. So I think that was my highlight. How about you?
Kate?
Sorry. well, that was my favourite thing as well.
Give her a nudge, wake her up.
Yeah.
She's trying to remember what she spoke about. Like, she's just come off the session.
I did enjoy when you're talking about the amendments of the bill and the ICO and the fact that we are one side we have the compliance, but the other hand is between a balance between being business driven or a balance with the individual rights. But I must confess that when we talked about the UK High Court direct marketing and consent ruling, so about thought about a case where we discussed about vulnerable groups of people and in particular the ones with addiction, and in this particular case about gaming, we made just a good points about what could be considered like freely given consent and what could be implications for business. And I think I really like consent, as you all know, so
yeah, that was like the RTMV Bontair Limited and Hesview Limited onto case, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that we got a lot of comment on the chat relating to the initial discussion, the first one. We were 25 minutes talking about the ICO and about changes to the Dewar Bill and then implications on that, like the ruling in the States, the change of the committee makeup. You know, there was a lot of discussion about that. And the other thing there was a lot of discussion about was AI, which there always is, partly because of the discussion around DeepSeek and then the other things like John Lewis and face recognition and the MP who claimed he didn't get shortlisted for a job because he got knocked out of the process by AI. So I thought it was a thoroughly enjoyable session. I really enjoyed, you know, the flow of it and the chat, the pace and the interaction. We got loads of interactions. Great getting interaction from the participants, isn't it? Lots of interaction this week, which is good.
Yeah, it was really good. It was a good session, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know what we're talking about next week, but in the meantime, we'll just let you get stuck into this one. That was in Monday morning. I was down in Birmingham early. I was doing some video recording for somebody who wanted to do a training session. I wrote a blog about AI a couple of months ago, and they asked me to go down and do a video session with them for some training videos they're doing on AI and data protection. So that was quite interesting. I've never done that before. And you know how rubbish I am at doing these. Do you remember when we did the videos for the website, and I was like, take 47, take 48. Yeah. I'm rubbish at this kind of stuff. Anyway, I did this all in one take. They said nobody's done it in one take before.
There you go. You must be improving, Phil.
I was on a roll. So I did that Monday. I've been out and about all this week. We did an audit, didn't we, Joe, in London on, was it Wednesday?
Yes, Wednesday.
Yeah. I was in the office yesterday, and so I'm just been catching up today. It's been a hectic week. And next week and the week after are just as busy.
How was the audit?
It was better than we thought, actually. Yeah, it was better than we thought. We hadn't been provided with much information prior to going, so our expectations were there was little in place. But when we got there, actually, there was a lot in place, which means that Joe's got a load of work now to do to read the stuff that we should have been provided with a couple of weeks ago. Big gaps still. Same with everybody we go and see.
Yeah.
You know, there's some obviously huge gaps, like no ROPAs and no control of processes, no notion of international transfers, despite using some well-known software as a service platforms like HubSpot and Salesforce. But a good team, a switched on team, very light on resources again, so you know, there's the only amount of ground I can cover. So some things were obviously missing, and then there was, in most areas, there was a bit of something, but not quite enough. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some tweak to get to compliance and beyond. So previous notes were generally there, but had a few bits missing, weren't they, Joe? Mm-hmm. You know.
It sounds a lot of work, which is always good.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that's how most people. And I said to you guys yesterday in the consultancy meeting that the longer we go on having had the GDPR enforced, the more I'm ratcheting up my expectations. You know, in 2018, it would have been acceptable to me to have kind of the best part of a rope of the broadly, you know, most things, important things, high risk things, recorded, maybe a few gaps, etc. Now, I'm not at all satisfied unless I can see a policy on ROPAs, a procedure for maintaining them, that people got responsibility for all the different records on the ROPA, that there's no gaps, that there's all the information is there. It can be verified by checking it back against the privacy notice and actually in the operation itself, you know, and that it is fully comprehensive and managed, a living, breathing document. If it isn't that, to me, it's not compliant. I mean, I might be overstretching it slightly, but you know, we want to see accountability. Yeah. We want to see a ROPA that works rather than one that hasn't been looked at since 2018.
Yeah, I think
go.
I was just saying, like, since 2018, the organizers already had more than time to actually find what will be the best for them, the best tools, what to do, what not to do, be compliant and see what should do. So I think it's more than 2025 we should.
Why do you think it is that it's been 7 years since, almost 7 years since the introduction of the GDPR, and yet organisations still don't have a ROPA when it's such a, you know, fundamental part of your infrastructure? But I mean, when the UK GDPR was published, you know, did the ICO not provide any guidance in terms of saying, you know, start with your ROPA? You know, was that not
the ICO said start with a data audit and compile an information asset register, didn't they? Their advice was data audit, information asset register. I'm thinking, well, what you want an information asset register for? You know, the ROPA is process orientated, not information pot orientated. So I think there's a lot of misinformation kicking about, a lot of guidance. Some of it was useful, some of it wasn't. But also it's blooming hard to do a ROPA. I mean, Rebecca's point is, you know, more urgent priorities, I'm assuming, outside of data protection landscape. Because for me, the ROPA is the absolute central hub of everything spins off that. You know, your processes or categories of recipients should be there. The initial transfers should be there. The retention should be there. Arguably, the TOMS, the technical measures should be there, although that is apparently optional. You know, lawful basis processing doesn't need to be there, but it's a good place to record it. But I think it's one of those things that is fundamentally central. But it's really, really hard to do. I mean, it was really hard to do. I think we're going to talk about AI in this session, aren't we, with DeepSeek and things. But we found that, and I've said it a few times, and you know, everyone's got to check their organizational policies on AI, but we've found that if you ask ChatGPT to give you a rope of a typical HR department, IT department, it does a pretty good job. And we did some work. I did some work for an eye surgeon just before Christmas, and I asked the ChatGPT to give me a typical record of patient activity for an eye surgeon, and it was fantastic. And the eye surgeon was astounded that I knew eye surgery inside out. good old ChatGPT. So I think it's easier. I think we've got better ways of compiling a templated ROPA, but it still needs tweaking and customizing to fit the actual operation.
To the operation.
But it, I mean, again, there's been quite a bit of turnover in staff. You know, so you might have had a very keen DPO started the process off back in 2017. They might have moved on after 2019. You know, if the policies and procedures weren't fully embedded, and if the DPO was seen as the owner of the ROPA, it's never going to work, is it? It needs to be that the individual process owners own their records and are responsible for a periodic review of them.
You know that aside from all of this, I agree with you. I feel that still the organizations, and I feel that with some of my customers, that data protection is always in the second plan, is never a priority when we are discussing or whatever. So if anything comes, data protection will always be in second. You know what I mean? So it's just... Well, I don't know, even if it's a legal requirement to actually have in place, and obviously we have the authority and then we have fines that could be applicable if you are not compliant. But I feel that in terms of priority, if it's like a business or their protection, rather than be something that will be interlinked or alongside with or doing well balanced, it's just one in detriment to the other.
Yeah, it's never had the same impact in a business as something like health and safety. And there's others like equality and diversity suddenly is like a leapfrog data protection, you know, as being massively important. Oh, unless you're in the United States of America, in which case it's now not important anymore. But prior to that, it was like, oh, yeah, we've got to make sure all equality and diversity is all boxed off. But data protection, no, you're right. It's, you know, I know that the people on this session are very much, it's their focus, love, passion, just the same as it is ours, you know, but organizationally. But I mean, I was interested in your note, in your podcast notes about that changes to the, or debates about the clause 90 in the Dewar Bill.
Yes.
You know, and so kind of, I just kind of go off on that on a tangent, just, you know, just for the time being, because that's really quite interesting. I don't know if anybody's aware of it. Do you want to characterize what that's about, you know?
I did some, I came across it on LinkedIn actually this morning, because one of the responses to the amendment, to the suggested amendment, was about, was kind of putting the ICO in its, in its place in terms of its approach. But so yeah, essentially clause 90 of the bill places unprecedented obligations on the ICO to support innovation, and whether this and the existing growth duty are in any sense treated as overriding the ICO's primary responsibilities in data protection and information rights. A question was raised on how does the ICO aim to balance those duties, ensuring that its regulatory actions support economic growth while maintaining the necessary protections. I believe Lord Holmes said that in simple terms, this would mean
that David. He's done well, hasn't he?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, right, okay.
But in simple terms, this would mean that those responsibilities are restricted and clearly set out according to Section 108 of the Deregulation Act 2015, saying it's critical that this should be the case if we were to have clarity around the Commissioner's independence as a supervisory authority on data protection, which is an absolute essential condition for EU adequacy. Now, a response came from Minister of State, Department for Science, Innovation and Technology, saying that he reiterated the statements made throughout the bill, debated that the government are committed to the ongoing independence of the ICO as a regulator and have designed the proposals in the bill with retaining EU adequacy in mind. The Commissioner's status as an independent supervisory authority for data protection is assured, and the ICO has discretion over the application of his new duties. It will be for him to set out and justify his activities in relation to those duties to Parliament. So to answer the specific point, he says, as well as that raised by the noble Lord Clement Jones, considerations of innovation will not come at the expense of the Commissioner's primary objective to secure an appropriate level of data protection. He hopes that that reassures the noble Lord. That's a direct quote. Mm-hmm. And Lord Clement Jones, I found it quite amusing what he said. It's quite a fair point. He said that they need to be vigilant as it is. There are criticisms regarding the way the ICO carries out its existing duties. Those criticisms can be broadly categorized into issues with enforcement, independence, and the balancing of competing interests. The ICO has a poor record on enforcement. It's been reluctant to issue fines, particularly to public sector organizations, and has been over-reliance on reprimands. As he described in the committee, the ICO has been relying heavily on reprimands rather than stronger enforcement actions. It's also been accused of being too slow with its investigations. Mm-hmm. There are concerns about these new duties, which could pose threat to the ability of the ICO to effectively carry out its primary functions. Now, actually on that, in there, he says that been accused of being too slow with its investigations. I did then go, when I was having a scroll down LinkedIn this morning, see, I don't know if you saw it, Phil, or Kate, it was to do with the ICO's response time. One of its main functions is kind of around how quickly it responds to complaints. So I think they said that their measure is that they will assess and respond to 80% of data protection complaints within 90 days. And back on Q2 2023-24, it was 92.7%, which is pretty high. And the most recent quarter, that had dropped down to 35.9%, and they expect the trend to continue. Really quite alarming.
90 days is a long time, isn't it? Imagine Sainsbury's saying that. Don't worry, we'll get back to it in 90 days.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not great, is it? Yeah, well, I raised that because I'd read that in your notes about this Clause 9. So basically what the new Doer Bill is trying to do is make the ICO consider economics and, you know, business.
Mm-hmm.
As well as, you know, folding it into their advice, their guidance, their interpretation of the law.
Yeah.
So back to your point, Katrina, that, you know, is data protection treated as serious as it should be in all organizations, not in our experience?
Yeah.
You know, is that going to get potentially worse if this gets through?
I think the risk in here is, I feel that all of this is related in comparison as well with complaints that Joe talked about now. If the ICO prioritizes the business interests over the GDPR compliance and the individual rights, I'm not sure if this will be, because for me, this is easily a contradictory interest, isn't it? It's really hard sometimes to actually do a balance between business interests and actually the rights of individuals. And
well, you take the PECA. Again, I read somewhere about the PECA and consent thing. So we talked about the issue the other week, didn't we? It's bonkers. I think it's bonkers. You know, I think it's bonkers that you can't reach out to people and say, do you mind if we contact you? You know,
yeah.
And if they say no, get lost and never darken my door again. If you do it a second time, arguably you deserve to get hammered, don't you? But why can't you do that the first time? Well, the ICO says you can't. Their interpretation of the directive, the privacy directive, is you can't do that. You can't unless you haven't. And they're really pernickety, aren't they? You didn't ask this specific question when you collected the data 25 years ago. Well, we didn't need to ask it 25 years ago. And you know, since the introduction of the e-privacy directive and the PECA, we haven't been allowed to ask it since without going knocking on all the doors, which is impractical. So the whole thing, I think, consent around, you know, emails particularly, because they're not... I know I hate getting, you know, intrusive emails, you know, like, do you want to buy this? No, I don't. If I did, I'd come and get you.
If I wanted to.
But it's not that intrusive. It's not that problematic, you know, to me individually. But so I wouldn't object to getting a, you know, sometimes it's actually quite useful to get an email and just saying, no, you know, don't, you know, click on a button. No. But, you know, that interpretation is likely to... is likely to change. And I think it should change, but in that case, but the ICO is likely to be pressured to take a different approach to.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, I mean, all the amendments and all the changes that we are seeing in the Doer Bill is obviously to make sure and to make it easier to the organization's life to actually to be compliant with the GDPR. But I feel that if our authority and our law enforcement has a focus in economic growth and is more business driven rather than actually the individual rights, which obviously we need to consider the business point of it. But the point of the data protection in the UK GDPR, in my point of view, is the protection of the individual rights and obviously make a balance with the reality. And if we are keeping a focus in economic growth and the business, in my fairest opinion, I think will lead to like a weaker enforcement in such amount of areas, for example, as a packer, like online advertising or actually trying to the packer consent requirements, probably the fact that we are lying probably not that strong a consent. And then we can ask the several questions around consent as well. If it's actually consent, is it freely given and meets all the requirements? Because we are open a window and we are opening a precedent with this. That I'm not sure about it. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Joe, what do you think of it? So the decline has been gradual over quarter two in 2023. It's been 92.7%, 88.2%, 64.8%, 49.9%, and then 35.9%. Why is the performance so poor? Have they got, you know, a massive spike in demand? Have they lost a load of people?
Well, on the
numbers
report,
seem quite low, don't they?
Yeah. It is a 35% of those complaints are responded to, yeah, within 90 days. So the comments they had on the report, and I'll put a link to the PDF so everyone can kind of read through it. It's a performance scorecard for the ICO's publisher. It says, as reported last quarter, our decline in performance is primarily due to maintained demand of our services running alongside a reduced capacity. We received an additional 370 data protection complaints in quarter two compared to quarter one.
Let me introduce you there. 370 per quarter.
Additional.
Yeah. Well, that's
totaling 10,586.
Yeah, it's 120
a
month. It's not that mega amount, is it? It's not like we had, you know, a million complaints, you know, extra.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, with high demand for our services set to continue, we expect the performance against this measure will continue to slide until we're in a position to roll out significant digital and process changes. Plans to transform the way we deal with customer complaints are in train with a staged rollout planned once we have consulted on them. Work will start on automating our case creation process in January with a March deliverable.
It's so strange. Do you think it's like, I don't know, I was just thinking about the individuals just become more aware of their rights, so increase in complaints, probably underfunding or staffing issues, like resources type of thing.
I think it's a combination of that, of people being aware now that they can actually start doing this, but also a combination of people who complain about things that aren't worth complaining about. You know, how many times do you hear about people saying, oh, I'm going to complain to the ICO because you shared my data with my consent? Well, I wasn't relying on consent in the first place.
Yeah, but that shouldn't take 90 days to get back to.
I agree, but if they've got a thousand of things and it's just a small matter, and you're just going to... I guess it takes 2 minutes to go back an email, doesn't it?
It might be just a clunky process. But 370 in a quarter is an average of increase of 6 per working day. I mean, that's not like astronomical,
is it? It's not that bad, no.
But kind of while we're on this topic of innovation and so on, and do you know where this has come from? I don't know if those that listen, it came from the Prime Minister wrote, didn't he, to 14 of the UK's top regulators on Christmas Eve about how he wanted a response of how these regulators are going to support innovative and economic growth. I don't know if you've all heard that, and there was questions a few weeks back whether ICO was one of the regulators that heard back. Have you seen his response, though? Have you seen the response that the commissioner wrote? He wrote a letter going back saying, kind of how he plans to support growth. And I picked three quite somewhat alarming things that he said. So I'll post a link for people to go and read the letter as well. But one of them was that he's going to cut costs for small business and medium-sized enterprises, saying that we know that SMEs can find it hard to navigate the digital regulatory landscape. Our digital content and business advice services already help tens of thousands of businesses each month. We're working to enhance these further through improving navigation and user experience and introducing more personalized and interactive content, including looking at ways we can use generative AI to create tailored advice.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that, yeah.
Like, what? And then another one was they're going to review where the PECA consent requirements are preventing an industry-wide shift towards more privacy-friendly forms of online advertising, such as contextual models, and publish a statement outlining low-risk processing purposes, such as privacy-preserving ad measurement, which are unlikely to result in damage or distress or be a priority for enforcement by the ICO. Mm. And they also want to say that they'll publish our public-facing online tracking strategy to set out our approach to regulating digital advertising. This will complement our growing pipeline of guidance in this area, including consent or pay service access models, recognizing the online publishing industry's increased reliance on these models to ensure the economic viability of their services. And it's just like, you know, I mean, that the consent or pay thing alone is a whole other thing, isn't it? We can go down a rabbit hole with that. And then one of the other points they made, point five, was about making it easier and quicker and easier to transfer data internationally, saying that international transfers of data underpin around 40% of UK exports and 20% of imports. These flows of data provide UK businesses with access to new markets and partners which can boost trade and drive innovation, investment, competition and growth. To facilitate this, they'll publish new and updated guidance on international data transfers, making it quicker and easier for businesses to transfer data safely. They'll work through international data fora, including the G7 and the Global Privacy Assembly, to build international agreement on increasing mechanisms for trusted free flows of data. And they will work with government to review adequacy assessments for key trading partners.
Yeah, well, we might come back to that. Lawrence has had his hand up for a while. He's been very patient.
Yeah, sorry, a lot of stuff there.
I'd have just butted in. But...
No, that's all right. No, I appreciate what Joe's saying and what's been said so far. I was just going to touch on the AI and regulators and the ICO improving advice and assistance, or giving advice to people. Because one of the things I proposed right away when AI and LLMs were really becoming online was why somebody hadn't scraped or the ICO itself taken all their decision notices since the start of the ICO and run them through an LLM to start to give a sense of how the ICO would rule on complaints, So if you came and it said, oh, section 43, well, put in your information and this is how the ICO is likely to show, say, what's going to happen on a section 43 complaint or something like that. I mean, I'm just sketching the huge principles. There's probably a lot more problems behind the scenes to make it functionable, or in a sense. But
it's a great idea. Yeah. It'd be fabulous. What a resource for people to use. It'd be great. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know how it would work in principle, but I'm just trying to – because one of the things that worried me about the Data Protection Act right away, or FOI in particular, was you have a limited amount of exemptions that get applied quite regularly, like in DPA. It's third-party data. That's like 90% of what you're going to do if you're an organization responding to somebody saying, I want the data. And it's like, well, it's somebody else's data. It's not yours, blah, blah, blah. But then you could start to then create a decision model that allows you to check it off. Say, well, is it personal data? Yes, no. And then you could use it as a decision-making tool. Again, the ICO could be leading on something like that to design an AI tool for data protection. It's just a thought.
Yeah, they should be. And then they should license it or make it freely available to just help educate and help with decision making. It's absolutely, I think they should be embracing it. Joe, is there anything that you want? There's some good points to be made about it could be the slowness of if it's a complex query, it could be that the the complainant, has to then interact with the ICO to provide more information. So it might not be the ICO being sluggish on why these performance stats have dropped. So it'd be interesting which direction they go in from here onwards, really.
Still on the ICO and talking about data protection authorities, I just want to just raise a point that I've seen while I was doing this research in LinkedIn, that despite the GDPR granting strong enforcement powers to the data protection authorities, there was a new report that was released last year, which states that a new analysis reveals that only 1.3% of cases result in fines. And that report is based on European Data Protection Board statistics that highlights the widespread inactivity and slow administrative procedures across the national data protection authorities. And even the most active, because one of the things that came to my mind was automatically Ireland and the Data Protection Authority in Ireland, because the majority of the big techs, Meta and Google, etc., are based in there. But apparently, and I can share with you a link on this report and also the European Board statistics that shows that Ireland is one of the data protection authorities that finds only the least, and only 0.26% of the cases that goes to court. And I'm not entirely sure about this, because I was reading the report and I was reading the statistics. I was kind of shocked, because I was expecting, obviously, with the fines, is expected from the GDPR that to hold the companies accountable for any data breaches or any terms of compliance. And if fines were meant to be a key determinant, but I feel that the enforcement of these fines is just weak in practice. And I was kind of shocked, like to see this in a report.
Yeah. I tell you what, I was shocked seeing the report that they spelled Finland wrong. The European Data Protection Board have spelled Finland wrong.
It's true. I see. Yeah. Finland.
Anyway, sorry, Jerry, you were going to say.
No, I was just going to say, but we have spoken on here before, haven't we, kind of why we don't see as many kind of GDPR fines as opposed to PECA. And I think it's harder to prove, isn't it, that there's been a breach of the GDPR as opposed to kind of the PECA. And where does a fine, what constitutes a fine? I imagine regulators will probably try and give organizations the chance to, solve the issue prior to kind of enforcement action.
I'm not sure what I'd like to see, not necessarily is more fines from the ICO. I'd like to see them be more proactive. So, and you compare the ICO with other quasi or government agencies like HMRC and Companies House, there's absolutely no leeway at all. If you submit your tax return 1 hour late past the deadline, it's an automatic £100 fine. And the Companies House are just as mean when it comes to submitting your annual returns. I know from painful experience. But the ICO, they don't seem to have the systems in place. I'd rather the ICO was doing, covering more ground and saying to people, you haven't got that, get it in place by the next 6 months. You haven't got that, get it in place. Mm-hmm. You haven't got that, this isn't good enough. I'd rather them doing that and people sitting up and listening rather than kind of seemingly concentrating all their efforts on fines. You know, I just don't think they cover enough ground. I don't think they're proactive enough. I think it's all very, very mostly reactive.
But they not do kind of like spot check things, you know, like how police send under like 70-year-olds into pubs to try and get pints and stuff. Could they not send people into organisations to try and get in and, you know, just send a member of staff into a central office in London, see if you can get in there, see what you can find out, and then just
like
issue them with a thing. Yeah, like a spy.
Like
you do, Phil, when you're on data protection audit. See if you can go in into the server room and have
get in there early
around.
And bribe my way in. Yeah. I didn't try and get in the server room on Wednesday because we were literally going out the door when we. I thought, oh, dude, itching to just try that door and see if it was locked.
Lawrence says he's seen spot checks or visits to council to find out what they're doing, but no undercover DPA officers. But councils, why are you focusing on councils? It's public authority, public money. Send them into these big, you know, private companies who have got millions of pounds, you know, try and get some money off them rather than really going for the council.
take a high risk-based approach. You know, where's the biggest pots of data? Yeah. Where's the most intrusive processing? You know, who's the trouble with the, like, again, because the ROPERS is a ridiculous situation that the ROPERS are an internal document. The ISO can ask for the ROPER. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but why isn't that type of information on a public register? Then they could have a look through and say, right, you guys are obviously doing high-risk processing, therefore we're going to focus our efforts on that. But because the GDPR doesn't require it to be in the public domain, then we're none the wiser. It used to be in the public domain, you know, years back when we had to do the original registrations. There was a huge, I keep going on around, I don't know, a huge load of forms to fill in for each of the processing purposes. But if it was in the public domain, then, you know, they'd have a big database of it. They could segment it. They could say, right, this is high volume, this is high risk. Right, we're going to focus our efforts on that. But because it isn't. And why, you know, again, why could you not interpret that, you know, right, in the UK, we want a registration process. We've got a registration process only to fund the ICO, but they could have tweaked that.
You know, I think you're on something there, because I think not only would, you know, it allow that, but it would hold organisations accountable, because when we do audit prep film and someone sends a ROPER over, I know within 5 minutes whether that organisation's probably missing something, there's gaps, they're not compliant. Mm-hmm. Within 5 minutes, so if it was a public-facing document, organisations will be a lot more kind of, you know, I don't want to say on edge, but okay, we need to make sure that at least the ROPER looks. You know, it, like you said at the start, that it covers most areas of the data protection law, right? You know, I know it's not always a requirement, but typically you see in there things about whether a DPA is needed. But even if that didn't have it on there, you can look at processing activity, the types of data involved, and gauge quite quickly whether a DPA is required or not.
Or likely to be required, therefore a screening.
Yeah, but I think that would mean that the ICO should have the resources to do it, and I'm not sure if it has. And that would mean that probably the staff should work more hours, or I don't know, just work more rather than being reactive would be something.
But then also, I've said it
but
before.
But I agree with you. It's just they are just inactive. They are just a reaction.
Why don't ICO get a percentage of the fines at the issue? You know, in terms of resource money back, why is these amends to the bill, two amends, make the ROPER a public facing document, and number two, the ICO gets a percentage of a fine issues, because then it'd probably be more likely to go do some enforcement action, but also then it'll have some more money to go and do these things proactively as opposed to just being a reactory service.
They'll all be rolling around in Bentleys, I'm telling you. So anyway, we can happily come back to this debate, but I wanted to say that obviously this week was International Data Protection Week, and Tuesday was International Data Protection Day. So I wondered what people had done to mark that occasion. Now, we published a quiz last week, didn't we? And we managed to yet again mess it up and didn't quite get the distribution mechanism right. So we need to apologise for the fact we didn't get that right. And we need to learn from that and make sure next time we do a quiz, it's much more easily deployable, because I think we overcomplicated it technically. And then we put it onto a platform that there was a there are restrictions on it. So sorry if that interrupted your wanting to use our quiz in your internal awareness raising. But what I don't know what everyone did. I did a training session actually with a client. They asked me to jump on and address. There's 160 of their staff that joined this sort of team session just to talk about data protection for an hour and a half, which was really good. I enjoyed that. So I don't know what if anybody did anything that was you know really good or really fun or really engaging.
Last week, you weren't here, were you, last week? We did put it out there to people, kind of asking what people are going to be doing for Data Protection Day. And was it someone called Tracy, I think? She joined and said Tracy. There's a cyber escape room film.
Yeah.
Oh,
the,
right.
You should have seen the chat. It went absolutely bananas over this over this escape room. She actually joined us and spoke about it for 5 to 10 minutes. I can't remember who was behind it. But
City of London Police have got one that they've come into your workplace free. It's called Cyber Griffin. I've seen it at events. It's brilliant. They use Lego. They have this Lego set, right? And then and as a team, you build up all your cyber defences using bits of Lego. And it's really good. I'm gonna put a link to it.
I think it's amazing, an idea. We could think about it next year.
Yeah, I'm just gonna. Oh, someone's note takers in there.
The Data Protection Day. I was on site. Yeah, I was on site that day. I went on site on the 28th. I was just visiting a client, and I did not provide training that day, but I was trying to convince them that data protection is actually very, very important, which is always good.
That was your input. My contribution to Data Protection Day was trying to sort this bloody quiz out for 2 hours. DPP and quiz is a cursed combination.
We said we'd do a song, didn't we, or something? But we didn't. We didn't.
Said you'd do a song, not we. You said you'd do a song.
Right. Okay. I'm distracted by this note taker. I'm trying to get rid of it, but I don't know how to. So I don't know if anybody else can. So that was quite interesting. You know, it's once a year, isn't it? It's great when it falls on a weekday because we can exploit it. You know, in our organisations. Mm-hmm. So after we find out when the next relevant calendar entry is, like, you know, Cybersecurity Day or Data Retention Day or whatever. But there's loads around you can piggyback on.
Is that a thing? That'd I've never good. Heard of any of
that. Data Retention Day, that would be good.
No, not Data Protection Day, that was Tuesday.
No, Data Retention Day.
Oh, yeah.
it might be International Day of the Elephant.
Are you making that up?
No, there's the International Day of the Elephant, and I think we usually refer to that as Data Retention Day. Maybe.
Oh, because it's the elephant.
I would love
room.
That.
badly, poorly. Anyway, yes. Now, I don't know if you if saw you... in the...
I was about to ask you if I've seen the news about the DeepSeek.
Yes, I was wanting to talk about that today. Yeah, but what that was probably the biggest news story, wasn't it, this week? There's a couple of others. There's a capture. I don't know if anybody's seen the capture exploit. You know, capture, the thing that you is that a fire hydrant? Yes. You know, pick on all the bits of bridges. Well, somebody's exploiting capture, and because it's a relatively trusted source, it's quite worrying. And what this new capture exploit asks users to do is control R to get to the Windows run prompt and then paste something into the run prompt, which then it causes problems on their computers and then the network. Now, I thought to myself, I'm not an administrator on my machine, so that won't work for me. But I clicked control R and whoop, up popped the Windows prompt screen. So I think it potentially would work on devices where even you're not the administrator. I didn't have time to explore it thoroughly, but that was quite worrying. I saw that. But do you want to talk about DeepSeek then?
Sure. So I'm not sure. I'm assuming that everyone's seen because it's all over the news. But the Italy's Data Protection Authority guarantee has blocked a Chinese AI application called DeepSeek from processing the personal data of Italian users due to concerns over their privacy. So the guarantee cited the lack of transparency regarding the app's data collection practices, including the types of personal data that were collected, the sources, purposes, legal basis for processing, and whether the data is stored or not in China. So DeepSeek developers have 20 days to respond to these queries. So just for the people that don't know, so DeepSeek is a Chinese AI startup that was founded in 2023. So basically, it's like a competition from ChatGPT. And these came to in 2023, I think, because ChatGPT was launched and then automatically China wanted to respond to this and was so much cheaper than ChatGPT and all the things in terms of building. So I had a thing around a privacy policy that I can share in the chat. And I was trying to understand, okay, so they have no reference whatsoever to EU GDPR or the GDPR, nothing related to that. There's nothing around personal data that is collected, to whom it is shared. So they say that can be shared with their group companies without any further detail. And there is, well, lack of information around transparency, where they are stored, if they have access, what type of access, whose legislation they say. And I've seen the news as well that they state after this that the GDPR is not applicable to them, so they don't understand why this is being raised in Italy, because GDPR is not covered in this situation. Which is, wow, because, well.
Yeah, there's been a lot all week about it, hasn't there? Yeah, and some of that I think the question has been answered. Like, I had a look at the DeepSeek privacy notice, and it clearly states, you know, it's like all these privacy, a lot of privacy notices, you know, it's what it doesn't say that is probably what you should focus on. But, there's nothing in there about a representative, for instance, which I was a bit surprised about. But it tells you what's going on to some extent with the processing, and it does say that it's all being stored in China. Fairly transparent, but I don't know why everyone's got a bit, people got worried about this for a number of reasons. One is it's completely undercut the American tech model, hasn't it? So
that's a big one.
So everyone's worried about that. Oh, heck, the Chinese are further on than we thought they were, and they're doing it cheaper, faster, quicker. Well, that's how they do a lot of things, isn't it? But then it's this, the data is going to China and, you know, can't be trusted, and it's censoring the responses, you know, seems to be censoring the responses. So how reliable is it in terms of giving you a response to your prompt? The fact that the data is in China, if I'm asking it a fairly innocuous thing for help, is that a massive problem?
I mean, I think the big question here is always, unfortunately, around the China versus American. We are just
I don't disagree with James on this. You know, I don't disagree with James on it. What's the difference? You know, it's data that's been amassed in on a huge volume, a huge scale, and you know, and then there'll be AI picking over it, working out, you know, whatever it's working out, and. But what's the impact, really? I don't know the impact.
I guess the concern is not necessarily about what it's scraping off the internet, probably more what people are putting inside of it. You know, lack of kind of care of people's personal data. If you're a manager and you're just bootloading employee information in there to help run reports and so on, then I think that's probably where the impact will probably come. But, you know, that just comes down to organizations having an internal policy. And you probably expect them to have that now. You know, ChatGPT has been around for a couple of years, has it? Was it introduced in 2023? You'd like to think that you know, acceptable use policies would have ChatGPT updated on there, and or if you can use ChatGPT, you know, rule number one, don't put employee data on there, especially if it's special category. Lawrence, you got your hand up, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think part of the challenges with AI and people harvesting large amounts of data is the purpose to which it's put to. So let's say the NSA is tracking terrorists, and I'm an American citizen abroad. I'm not too really worried about them because, A, I'm not a terrorist as far as I know, although who knows? Anyways, but the other side of it is let's say if it's in China, for example, what people might be saying is like the influences to which it's used, in that China isn't as responsive to laws and international pressures, let's say the United States or the UK, all things being equal. You know, you have a better chance of suing the US government and winning than you do with suing the Chinese government and winning, so on and so on. But let's leave us that aside, is we might only be seeing the initial influence of AI and how it shapes the online communities, because people are talking about this during the elections. But also, let's see how Facebook, how it was shaping its users and influencing them indirectly by privileging content based upon where they're at. So there could be an element to that that people are seeing, and this is the concern. So we're only seeing what people deeper into the system are saying, look, this is a big problem for us. We have to be concerned about it. So that in time, we, the user on the small, the ant, so to speak, have yet to see the full consequence of this massive shift of data, personal data in particular, and how it starts to then move into, let's say, influence or indirect impact on our online world and shaping our worldview. Because so many people now get so much of their news through their phones and their systems and their platforms, that when AI starts to influence it, like little tendrils, you don't notice it. Whereas if somebody were to do that with a newspaper, you'd be like, well, somebody's taken over that newspaper and the whole newspaper looks different versus there's been a subtle shift in how my online world looks now. I mean, it's just a thought, because I mean, I can see it with Twitter. Twitter today looks a heck of a lot different from Twitter 7 years ago or 5 years ago or 3 years ago. It really does. It's just really different. So just a thought there. Sorry.
Oh, I think my thing might have frozen.
You're here, Phil.
Yeah, I don't know. I've got this big white.
Sorry, I was just engrossed in the chat.
Yeah, no, I think, Lawrence, it was just a really good point. I'm just thinking, like, in terms of what is happening now, I completely agree with you. And I think probably what we are facing here is probably a balance of powers. And we just, again, just need to be careful and vigilant and just filter what we see and just be critic about what we see on the news and making sure that we know that these are business and the balance of powers between the Chinese government, I think, in one hand, and then probably the American or Occidental world in the other. So we're just trying to bear that in mind.
Yeah. Well, what else? So the Italians have got uppity about it. And the Garant is now saying that they've got 20 days to come back with answers to questions. What else have you seen? There's been a lot in the news every day about this.
I saw, well, not about that. Are you staying on AI or can we... Sorry,
no, you can do, but I did see, I don't know if you're going to say the same thing. I saw that AI is now creating AI. It says,
no, I'm not. That was a report that, say.
That it's crossed a red line and is now is now kind of potentially built, is in the independent, potentially building rogue AI models.
No, I didn't see that, but
we'll put it in the chat.
Talking while we're talking about AI and, you know, sentient beings and so on, I watched Big Fat Quiz of the Year last weekend. I know it's a bit late because it's 4 weeks into 2025, but there was a clip of a Tesla robot and someone asked it, what do you find, what's the hardest thing for you to do? And he said trying to imitate that, like the behavior of a human, is what it said. So right. It's not really relevant, but it just, you know, kind of while we're on the topics of
I tell
robots,
you what, I
was a little bit scary
astounded by it. I was astounded to read an article about somebody had spotted a new asteroid hurtling towards the Earth. It turned out to be a Tesla Roadster with a dummy.
Where was
in it? It's in the sky. It's 150,000 miles up. And apparently when they were testing out one of their rockets, they deployed this car in space.
Well, it's just yeah. Right, we're getting sidetracked here with stories that aren't really to do with data protection. So I want to bring it back round. Now, did you see that President Trump has fired, I believe, or removed members of the Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board?
Yeah.
Which now brings the numbers of people down below the threshold that allows it to operate. And the fact that the US president simply removed people from an allegedly independent authority questions the independence of all other executive redress bodies in the US. And I think the kind of where this kind of comes into data protection is that the European Union has relied on these US boards and tribunals to find that the US provides adequate protection of personal data. Relying on the PCLOB and other mechanisms, the EU Commission allows European personal data to flow freely to the US in the so-called EU-US private data privacy framework. Mm-hmm. So obviously now, with the PCLO not being operable, I imagine that puts the framework at serious jeopardy. Yeah, I think that could be quite interesting. I think I don't think Schrems is going to have to take this one to court. I think it might just come all unraveling itself, but I guess we'll have to see.
It could do. Yeah, could you stick a link to that in the chat, please?
I can. Yeah.
I mean, the point about Copilot. Every time I use a Windows device, Copilot is the first thing. You search for anything on Edge, and it's straight away Copilot. You know, every time I log on to Office, it's, oh, do you want to install Copilot? It's just desperate to get it installed, aren't they?
They are, yeah. Now, sorry, I'm having a...
Did you see... I can't type and speak, but I'll try. Did you see that John Lewis have introduced or are planning to introduce, and they have introduced, AI-powered age check to sell knives online? Did you see that?
No, did it say how it worked? Mm.
It says facial scan, and then AI quickly assesses to confirm if they're over 18. The age verification technology developed by a British company called Yoti.
Sorry, so does your computer scans your face, does it? Do you have to have a webcam for that to happen, or I don't understand.
Yeah, you want to buy a knife online. All devices have got cameras these days, haven't they? Tablets, phones, computers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, before you can process, part of that, you know, verification process will be, you know, verify your identity using the camera. But I was just interested because there's some people who look remarkably young or old. So do you know, have you ever watched Derry Girls?
I haven't.
Yes.
You haven't?
No, sorry.
I have. Well, yeah, I have.
There's an actor called Claire. She's called Nicola Cochrane.
Nicola.
She plays Claire, yeah. How old do you think Nicola is?
I know that she's almost 40, but she's like, looks like 18 years old.
This is her.
She's unreal. She's not like
she's
38.
40.
He's 37. He's unreal, yeah.
Yeah. And then this, the Colin Morgan, who played Merlin. This is Colin Morgan, who played Merlin. But this is him as well.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, potentially, I mean, these got professional prosthetics and things, you know, on there, and professional makeup artists. But, you know, AI, is it how reliable is it? I mean, does it matter how reliable it is? You know, it's better than any other verification process in place. But, you know, I'm just interested to see that it had happened. And I thought about these people that are remarkably young that might struggle to buy a new vegetable peeler, or people that might dress themselves up remarkably old, like me.
How about just stop letting people buy knives online? Make people go into a store where you have to get ID'd by an actual person.
Well, you could send somebody else in to buy it, or you could get dressed up, I guess. But yeah. Derry Girls is fantastic. Yeah, Derry Girls is fantastic.
Just a quick recommendation.
But I mean, there's John Lewis, you know, cutting edge using AI. You know, I wonder if there's a DPIA done on it. Wonder.
I'm just wondering if the system, if it AI could be more reliable than, for example, a human judgment on,
but that's
I
what
don't
they,
know.
That's yeah. what they're saying.
Yes.
How do they carry out the checks before that? Do you have to, like, submit a photo of your ID?
I don't know, but I wouldn't have thought there'd be any checks.
Probably they'd ask you, for example, your, like, date of birth, or if you are older or not, that's 18.
Yeah. Yeah, that's potentially. Like, I mean, like, if you log on to any kind of, not that I often do, but like a booze website, then it's all always asking you, are you over 18? Yeah, of course I am. You know, not tricky, not easy to fool them. I mean, now I saw it. One of the articles I put in the chat, I think it was about the capture. There was referring to, I know it was in Forbes. They're referring to a survey, and apparently, according to this survey, 39% of UK organisations lost sensitive personal data in the last 12 months. That's a staggering statistic.
Wow. No. And did they any information about how they were lost?
No. There isn't. No.
Error,
yeah, actually, yeah, it's about the. So in the capture article, I think it's in there. 39% of UK organisations suffered a loss of sensitive data in the last 12 months, with 69% of European CISOs agreeing that employees are responsible for all these incidents due to risky actions such as misdirecting emails, clicking phishing links, installing unauthorised software, and emailing sensitive data to a personal account. So, you know, humans are our weakest. We were saying, weren't we, in the audio the other day, Joe, humans are our weakest link. But poor systems to support the humans is potentially behind many of those.
Mm-hmm. And poor policy procedures and training as well. You know, that all has impacts. Yeah. Claire's left a comment saying that she needed proof of ID for chili oil when it was delivered. Data minimization coming to mind there. Phil, that reminded me of when we went to Kent for the audit last year, and they asked for your driving license, didn't they, in case we trashed the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I have a certain reputation being a rock star. You know.
We're getting distracted. Anyway, did you see, I saw a story about a significant UK High Court around direct marketing and consent ruling came off of an individual who took Sky Bet and gaming to court, alleging that his personal data was misused for direct marketing purposes, especially considering he had a gambling addiction. The court found that during 2017 to 18, the defendants did not obtain valid consent from the individual for the use of cookies for sending direct marketing emails. The judgment emphasized that due to the individual's compulsive gambling behavior, he was unable to provide genuine consent and his actions were driven by addiction rather than informed choice. A subsequent hearing will determine the appropriate remedies.
I think it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because in here we actually have like a clarification or more confirmation that the vulnerable individuals, including those with addictions, may, when they provide consent, will not in principle be freely given and will have like challenges around it. It's really good. Yeah,
I was interested in that, Joe, because you know it's impossible to provide informed consent. Now I think there is a register that you can go on as if you're addicted to gambling, so that the gambling providers can bar you from their premises or sites and things. So if that person was on that, like it's like a preferencing service, isn't it, I guess, but for gambling addicts, then you could say, well, yeah, okay, you should be checking against that register. But if that person wasn't on the register, I mean, how are you meant to know? I mean, how are you meant to know if certain circumstances relating to that person means that they can't give genuine informed consent?
It's really hard, isn't it? How can they, I mean, we are relying on consent, and how can they just ensure that consent is actually freely given when they are targeting high-risk customers, because these are where they are addicted? Right.
Because what you always say, Kate, when money's involved, they don't care about individuals.
Exactly.
All they're after is profit. And, you know, Lawrence put a question in the chat for those that are kind of listening back saying, you know, would the gambling addiction be covered as special category? And I said yes. Yeah. And he made a point saying it's worrying how gambling addicts or folks who have massive gambling debts are pursued by gambling companies. Not all do this, but especially in the US. But gambling and kind of advertising in relation to gambling is, especially in the sport world, in the UK, is a real, real issue. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Football League is sponsored by Sky Bet. There's a very high number of football teams who have gambling sponsors, whether it's the main sponsor, sleeve sponsor, or on the back of the shirt, you know. Gambling and kind of the marketing that it deploys is really an issue. It's something that kind of needs to be addressed. And I think it is something that's, I think there's a charity behind it, I think. But a lot of football clubs kind of, you know, obviously you've got young fans, haven't they? But
I'm just wondering, how can you call them? Like, how can you know that they are actually addicted? Right, even if it were registered, that would mean that you are relying on someone to actually register
it's a voluntary code, unless you could probably profile somebody and use AI to draw conclusions. That would be positive use of AI.
That's a good point.
But when I worked in football, which is many years ago, to be fair, you know, I think every shirt sponsorship I did was alcohol. Strongbow, White Mackay, and Chang beer.
Chang for Everton,
And Strongbow for Leeds and White Mackay for Leeds. And all of the, you know, we were just driven by money.
I mean, you all know my problem with it. When we are talking about money and within all these basic needs, it's just a problem. It's always a problem because it's always biased. It's never balanced. And unfortunately, individuals will always be the one to suffer.
That was before I saw the light. When I was working in commercial director in these football clubs, that was before I saw the light.
And now you are.
Turn to the good side. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I have seen one thing in the news. I'm not sure if you have seen it, that the European Union had proposed that the children's sexual abuse material regulation that aims to scan all digital messages across platforms like WhatsApp, Signal, Snapchat, and any cloud services to detect and report child sexual abuse material. However, people that are saying, because they want to scan all messages, photos, videos that are sent online, that will mean that will be scanned before being encrypted or through any AI on users, etc. But I think in this, we are talking about one hand, and I understand that we're talking about, like, it's like a paradox, isn't it? Because we're talking about like predators that will also have access to the information, but on the other hand, you are introducing a mass civilians and so many security risks. You'll be able to see and scan everything, WhatsApp, Signal, Snapchat, everything that could be sexual abuse material.
Yeah, then you've got purpose limitation as well around that, haven't you? If it's scanning messages for the purpose of trying to find sexual abuse messages and stuff, what if other things crop up, you know? Other kind of illicit texts and stuff, and I'm not trying to condone it, but it's not.
Yeah, I think even the UK in the past with the online safety bill, they tried to implement these measures, but they just said no because the technology could compromise the privacy, so we'll just leave it.
It's a tricky situation, isn't it? You know, and technology is potentially quite a big, and the law is certainly a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes, you know, what we need is precision, because as we well know, you know, the context is king, isn't it? And you know, that's hard to implement.
Yes. Well, as we reach the half an hour mark, I just want to make a point. Miles has asked me just to let everyone know who's listening that we've actually posted 3 job opportunities. I just wanted me to make that mention and to drop a link into the chat if anyone is interested. We do have 3 opportunities to come and join us at DPP. Who knows? You may be one of the future hosts of the podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah. Successful. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or not.
For a podcast host, we're all off. Being sacked. Now, what are you doing next week? Then we've run out of time. I wanted to talk about AI gets a bad rap. Apparently, former cabinet minister David Davis, who was Welsh Secretary in Rishi Sunak's Conservative government, applied for a job, didn't get it. He's blaming biased AI because he doesn't have a degree. But that's probably not AI. That's probably just a really simple, you know, dependent formula on a form.
Yeah.
AI gets a bad rap, but I think gets blamed for everything. Right, what are we doing this week then? Have you got anything interesting coming up?
Yes, next week I start I've been drafted in to do 10 days of auditing over the course of February, I guess, and maybe a little bit beyond, depending on how long it takes me. So next week is the start of that. I go on Thursday on site down in London. And then obviously next week we're doing some prep for that. Prior to that, me and you, you're off, aren't we, Phil? And then you'll be leaving me to my own devices to hope that I see if I either sink or swim.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. I was just laughing at Chris's responses, and it's because I was thinking just because he was in Rishi Sunak's government, that's a good enough reason to not give him a job. But anyway, what are you doing, Kate?
So I was on site 2 weeks ago and last week. So next week will be just for me to write all the reports that I need to write and prepare for my next on-site meeting as well with another client in London that will happen 2 weeks from now. So I will just drafting and writing audit reports and CCTV report as well. So very exciting.
exciting stuff. Right. Well, that's it. We've run out of time, I'm afraid, but I'd like to thank you both for your excellent contributions, and everybody on the who's participated. You know, it's been a very, very busy chat, so thank you very much to everyone for joining in the conversation. Hope that was moderately interesting and useful and potentially even thought-provoking. But have a great weekend, and we'll see you hopefully next week.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.
See you.
Bye.
Later. We'll be right back.